This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, Managing Editor of Texas Scorecard, joined again by Jeremy Kitchen, Capitol correspondent. We're back here in the studio. I think it's been a few weeks since we've been here. What with the weather kind of affecting the last couple of weeks, but stuff is starting to warm up, obviously. And even with President Joe Biden, I think is coming down here later today to Houston. But things are warming up. The question is, are things going to start to warm up in the state legislature right now? They're holding hearings. They've held hearings yesterday, and they've also. Holding a hearing today, looking into those power outages, right? Now, last week we talked a lot about that, a lot about ERCOT and the grid and what led to millions of Texans being out of power. The legislature has set up hearings investigating that. What have we seen so far?
A whole lot of nothing, if we're being honest. So to be clear, right, on the House side, it's a joint hearing between the House State Affairs Committee and the House Energy Resources Committee. Mm-hmm. On the Senate side, it's a hearing with the Senate Business and Commerce Committee. And they started hearings yesterday. That went late into the night, and then they've continued those. They recessed briefly and then continued those again this morning. Invited testimony only, right? And they've kind of held maybe not a mixed bag, that's not the right term, but like they've heard the PUC chairman, right? Some representatives from different producers, energy producers or generators right around the state. And this is maybe what you're getting into, right, is like there's If you're tuning in to get answers, it's been short, right, of a lot of that. It's been a lot of kind of political posturing and finger-pointing, not necessarily substantive.
I don't think it's particularly surprising that you're calling in these people, all who have some level of culpability in this, be it, maybe some of the unreliable sort of energy, wind, solar, those producers in there. You have the ERCOT CEO testifying, and the public utilities chair who actually oversees ERCOT alongside the legislature. That's a Governor Abbott appointee. She's getting a lot of tough questions, especially last night in the House. But what we haven't really seen is, okay, what actions are going to come from this, right? Sure. I'm a little bit reminded of, I think we can all remember back in, during the Obama era, when the House would hold hearings and they'd have, Lois Lerner, from the IRS, and they'd rake her over the coals and they'd get some good sound bites that go on Fox News. And then you remember nothing ever happened to any of those people. The question is, are there going to be consequences going forward?
That's yet to be seen, to your point. I think the other thing to note there, right, is like at least on the House side yesterday, there were a few legislators that kind of took the opportunity to posture themselves in whatever way, which is to be expected. But there was one moment too where Todd Hunter, representative from Corpus Christi, right, he mentioned maybe not raked over the coals, but like got somewhat aggressive, right? And basically said, look, the governor came out and said a priority is the winterization, right, of these sort of things. He's like, I don't even know what that means, right? Can you tell me what that means, talking to one of the generators there? And honestly, they all had kind of a different interpretation of what that might mean, right? And obviously that's going to play out throughout the remainder of the session, but I think that speaks to, right, the overarching problem. What is the solution here, right?
Well, and they've said that those solutions are going to use these hearings and they're going to come up and clarify some of this legislation, and we should be seeing bills, coming up, I suppose, in the coming weeks on that. They're going to probably have to start moving a little quicker, though. You had an analysis this week about how fast or how slowly the legislature is moving right now. Obviously, some of that is due in part to the backdrop of, this of coronavirus and not holding as long of hearings and stuff. But at the same time, they're not where they were 2 years ago or 4 years ago.
Right. Yeah. I tried to compare the numbers, right, with the number of bills that have been filed in both chambers, the House and Senate, versus the number of bills that have been referred. We are within the period in which bills can start to be referred to committees. Now, granted, you may know, right, like they're bound via provision of the Constitution. They're also bound by their rules. The House has rules and the Senate has rules to where they can't take up bills, right, or vote on them, with the exception of things deemed emergencies by the governor.
Right.
But they can start, and they could have, within 30 days of the bill filing deadline, which is coming up here on March 12th, they could have started referring bills. And the takeaway from that is referring bills may sound like just this kind of nominal practice. What it does internally in the legislature is it allows for legislators to start, right, the hearing request process, right, within the individual committees. It allows their staff to produce the bill analyses on all of the bills that they're requesting hearings on, right, and get that in front of the committee clerk, you know, being efficient with our time, right, to assume that, hey, they can bring these up for hearings and they're not doing that later on in session.
Right. And you know, okay, to be fair, right, last week, nobody expected they'd be gone for a week. But the fact of the matter is that they had committees ahead of that. They could have been referring bills then. Mm-hmm. The House actually did start to, I think, just moments after, I think you caused it, I think. Sure. maybe correlation, causation thing. The House has actually started referring some bills. But the Senate right now pretty much hasn't.
That's right. So as of yesterday, when I wrote the article at the time, the House hadn't referred any bills. Yeah. The Senate had referred two. Shortly thereafter, the House did refer bills. I think it's 477 total, starting at House Bill 25 all the way up to 500, basically. And you did start to see, just as an aside, you did for the first time start to see some of the quote unquote House priorities start to get filed too, right? The low number bills as well here over the last week. And the Senate side though, they're still at two bills referred. One of those bills is of course the budget. You know, we have, it flips on what chamber starts it every biennium. It's a Senate bill that's going around, Senate Bill 1. The other bill is just, and the only reason it was referred is as a parliamentary practice, there's a bill called the blocker bill, which gets referred. So that way later on in session, just as a part of parliamentary procedure, they can bring up other bills on the intent calendar.
Right. So more of a formality, something kind of within their rules.
Correct.
Do you think we're going to see bills start to move faster here? I mean, we've got what, less than 100 days now left in this session.
Right.
Still a good amount of time, but that bill filing deadline is coming up.
That's right. So we're 94 days away from the end of session. We are exactly 2 weeks away from the bill filing deadline, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the first big time hack that takes place during session, which it kind of pivots, right? The legislators pivot from doing things more internally to actually starting to do or participate in the legislative process. Normally or historically, you see like the governor's emergency priorities or the House's or lieutenant governor's priorities start moving faster, right? Obviously, they want to get those through the process. And then, you know, whatever time is left is kind of what's left for everything else, right? The runoff of that. And it is somewhat concerning when you compare to previous sessions. You know, if you don't mind, I'll go through some of the numbers, right? Like, you know, out of all the bills filed in the House right now, which is over 3,000, right? Only 21% of those bills, have actually been referred, right? Compare that to previous sessions. It was 36% last session in the same time period, right? It was 43% in the 85th. In the 83rd, right, which is 2013, it was 68% of the bills by now had been referred, right? And so they can't ignore that they are, in fact, going slower. I will say, you know, contrast that with the dichotomy of, as conservatives, normally we don't want, you know, like, yeah, okay, bill's not moving. That might not be a bad thing, right? But I think the takeaway is, you know, out of the ones that do start moving, there's only so much time on the clock. Are conservative priorities going to be the ones that actually move?
Well, and that's the question. We've looked at, a few weeks back, or I guess it was at the beginning of the month. It's actually been quite a while now, where Governor Greg Abbott listed out his priorities, right? And only one of his priorities, election integrity, was actually one of the Republican Party of Texas's priorities. You also did see this week, briefly mentioned earlier this week, that Dan Patrick released 31 priorities. So you had a few on there, ending taxpayer-funded lobbying, election integrity, that aligned with Republican Party of Texas priorities. But for the most part, they didn't. And I think that's a very, very interesting point to be made there, where, as conservatives, probably don't want to see thousands of bills. I think most of these bills can probably just stay wherever they are. But there are priorities that people do care about, and they did elect their lawmakers to get done. And the question is, are they going to have time to move through those?
Right.
Now, another thing that happened this week, actually you had yesterday, Governor Greg Abbott, during a press conference in Corpus Christi, was asked when an end was coming to the statewide mask mandate and other statewide coronavirus mandates. And he said an announcement would be made pretty soon. Now, I'm just taking his words. Look, I don't know what pretty soon means. Does pretty soon mean next week to you? Does it mean a month from now? I don't know. But I think there's a couple of factors here at play that are important to recognize. One of them is that we're coming up on the year anniversary here pretty soon. I think it's March 13th, right, when the original disaster declaration was issued for 15 days to slow the spread. And I think that's an important monument if you're Governor Abbott, and something you probably want to avoid, headlines about if we reach that 1 year mark.
Nope, would definitely agree. I think there's certainly, whether implicitly or not, some political kind of underpinnings for this sort of thing, especially when you're constantly competing for media oxygen, right, with other governors around the United States, right?
Well, sure. And you had Florida Governor Ron DeSantis actually removing all of the statewide mandates in Florida back in September. So if Texas was actually to do this, they would certainly not be the first. You have states like South Dakota, where their Governor Kristi Noem has made somewhat of a national celebrity of herself for going around and saying that they never closed down the state. And so that's going to be interesting to see exactly what that announcement is and see, is he going to defer to local officials, right? Sure. Is he going to, defer to, federal guidance, federal mandates? Right. That's something we're going to see. But depending on how soon that announcement is, he might not have to wait. You do have bills being filed right now, a couple of pretty interesting bills being filed that we wrote about earlier this week by State Representative Matt Schaefer. Those are House Bills 2097 and House Bill 2098. The first of those bills actually removes the statewide mask mandate.
That's right.
The second of which actually removes any ability to fine or imprison for violations of executive orders. You think those bills have a chance during the session?
Obviously, we hope so, right? I think that the key thing to note about House Bill 2097, the one that removes the mask mandates, is that it does it for both the executive branch and local governments, right? So it does it for both, which is interesting. I know Representative Schaefer will be pushing it. And then to your point on House Bill 2098, it does get rid of that penalty, and it'll be interesting to see how that comes up, both not just with the bills, but I assume as if there are bills that at least make it to the floor that deal with emergency authority, I can almost assure you that these things will try to be amended on those things too if they're not included, right?
Absolutely. And the question is, with Governor Abbott saying that maybe an announcement will be coming soon on this, could he be trying to possibly avoid that legislative fight and try to moot the issue before it actually comes on the floor? Something that we'll be watching. If those bills ever do get to the floor, how's this for a segue? The House will have one more member than it did last week. You had a new member, a new Republican joining the State House. That was David Spiller winning the seat that used to be held by State Representative Drew Springer, now State Senator Drew Springer. Two big things, I think, on this, even if you don't live in the district. This is important. I think this actually ends a pretty long saga. Right. The domino effect that started with Congressman John Ratcliffe going to become the Director of National Intelligence, and now about five special elections later and runoffs, that domino effect is done for now. The other interesting thing to note there, though, we talk about the importance of voting and importance of getting out there and getting involved in elections, is that there was extremely low turnout with this race.
That's right. Yeah, I think you had, it was over 6% of overall registered voters. But really what that number, I think more important number, is it was less than 5,000 people, right, voted for the candidate that actually won. And, these are people that represent their district, are 180 to 200,000 people, right? And obviously that's a district that's election fatigue, I think, is kind of the term that's been coined, right? Is like, to your point, they've had all of these elections over the last year as a domino effect. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting kind of turnout metric, that effectively less than 5,000 people determine the representative for a district that's 22 counties, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And another election, that special election's done. Now we've got a new special. I think there's always a special election on the calendar. This time for Congressional District 6. This was the seat that was vacated after Congressman Ron Wright passed away a few weeks ago. That race becoming crowded. What are the dates for that one for people who live up there? That's a district that's sort of like Tarrant County and kind of goes down to some counties to the southeast.
Right. So the governor announced that the filing deadline for that, and I assume the field is not done, right, being filled. The filing deadline for that is March 3rd, so coming up here. And then the actual election itself takes place May 1st of this year.
Got it. Excellent. Well, looking at some of the comments here right now on Facebook Live, if you're watching live, Carol says, Collin County Judge Chris Hill presented a resolution to rescind the COVID-19 disaster declarations. Yeah, that's something that happened this morning. We have an article up pretty shortly here on TexasScorecard.com about that. But I think, you know, that's a pretty big, you know, Collin County up in the DFW Metroplex actually going forward and removing their local disaster declarations is something that maybe we can expect to see coming from more places as citizen pressure builds up. Doc Green says, abolish ERCOT. Deanna Walker and her minions at the Public Utility Commission should also resign. Speaking about the chairwoman, like I said, I think that's a sentiment that a lot of folks are feeling. At the same time, I think it's a sentiment that a lot of legislators are hoping will distract from their own lack of oversight thus far on the commissions. Quick shout out to everybody watching. Got Carol watching from Navarro County, which I believe is in Congressional District 6. So you're going to have a special election coming up there. Gerald watching from Cross Plains. Doc tuning in from Houston. Hannah watching from Dallas. And Tiffany in Deer Park. Thank you to everybody for joining us there. If you've got any questions or comments, please feel free to leave them down there. We'll get to those. Check them out after the show. But for right now, last thing, when does the legislature come back?
They'll be coming back, actually, Texas Independence Day, March 2nd, Tuesday next week.
There you go. So we'll be seeing that and seeing what actions come out of the legislature. We'll be following that all week at TexasScorecard.com. Remember, as we get involved in the process, you can check out our directory at TexasScorecard.com, where you can contact your lawmakers and tell them how you feel. We've also got a new bill tracker that shows exactly how the priorities of the Republican Party and Democrat Party are doing. Have they been filed? Have they had committee hearings? It's something we're going to update throughout the session, so you can check all that at TexasScorecard.com. For right now, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.